Cue the fancy intro music. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and this is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom helps you to find success on your own terms and build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. So whether you watch the web series, the live Q&A, or are just joining us through the podcast, welcome. I'm excited you're here. In our last episode,
last time on Creative Freedom,
we talked about the common signs that indicate that you should probably be charging more. 11 of them, to be more precise. And that's great. It's important to be able to know when to charge more, but that's only part of the story, right? I hear that regularly. Well, that's great, Lisa, but how exactly do I do this? I mean, what do I say? How do I actually raise my rates in my business? So this is the logical follow-up to our last episode. We're actually going to talk about the how of raising your rates. What can I say except you're welcome? You know, a lot of coaches and trainers will give you the what and the why and leave the how for their flashy five-figure program, right? But that's not how we roll at Creative Freedom HQ. Besides, there is so much that I could teach on this topic that I couldn't begin to fit it all in a single episode anyway. So you are getting the top level overview. It's enough to get you going, but I could go deep on each one of these methods, and I might actually do that a bit in this week's Q&A. If you're on my Facebook page this week, hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Now, there are basically two ways to effectively raise your rates so that you're retaining more income. The first is obvious. Raise your rates. The second is to keep your rates the same and either do less or find a way to reduce your cost to get things done for less. Or you can do some combination of those things. These are really the only ways to charge more for your existing work. Alternately, you can also make new offers or find a new audience, which can help you make more. You just need to be careful that you're not overdoing, which whittles away the value and the leverage that you're trying to create for yourself. We're really not going to look at new markets and new offers in this episode, though, because that's a deeper set of topics, perfect for some future episodes, methinks. But today we're going to focus on how to make more from what you've already got going on. With that in mind, let's take a look at the ways that you can raise your rates right now. Number one, take the Nike approach and just do it. Pick a product or an offer and mark it up. It really can be that simple, you know. Gas stations do it all the time. Prices go up, prices go down. No need to explain it or justify it. Just raise the dang price. I know you might be feeling some angst around this, but remember, people who are not already doing business with you have no idea what your prices currently are. They don't need an explanation. They just need clear pricing that makes sense to them. It doesn't matter what your price was yesterday because they're here today. So tell them the new rate and don't worry about the old price. Even if you've got existing clients paying the old rate. If you've got clients locked into contracts like I do with the incubator, then if you need to raise rates, you may need to give them some notice before prices go up. For example, my lease is locked for a year on my apartment. At the end of the year, my landlord can adjust the rent upward. And if they need to adjust the rent in the middle of the lease, they have to give me ample notice. And I have the option of breaking the lease if they do. Number two, if you don't have clients locked into an extended term, if you're raising rates with existing clients, it's kind to loop them in. Think about how you work with them and how you want to inform them about pricing changes. There are a few options here, actually. With my incubator clients, I mentioned they have a locked fee agreement for a year, and then we review and adjust at the annual renewal, kind of like health insurance. You pay a premium for a certain period of time, and when that period ends, you'll feel the price increase. Now, a few years ago, I gave all my clients notice that my rates were going up at the beginning of the year across the board on all my products and services. While the rest of the world didn't need to know that, I thought it was appropriate to loop my clients in ahead of the curve. Now, I did this for two reasons. One, because I thought it was the right thing to do to give them as much notice as possible. And two, because if they wanted to take advantage of the lower pricing, I didn't want them caught with their pants down, so to speak. I wanted them to have plenty of time to make a buying decision and get the lower priced options if that's what they wanted before the rates went up. That's more money in my pocket. That's sales for me. Woohoo, I like that. Now, another approach is to use a graduated pricing increase. One of my clients was able to gradually increase her client fees over the course of a year because her clients were paying by the session. This gave her clients time to adjust to the new rates and still allowed her to feel some kind of a rate increase each month instead of waiting until the end of the year. Another approach that she offered was to give clients a chance to pre-purchase sessions in bulk at the old rate before the new rate went into effect. Now, the result was a cash injection for her business right now and a lower rate over the course of the next year for the clients that took her up on the offer. It also helped to guarantee that she'd actually have clients in her calendar for the next few months so that she would have, you know, work to do. Number three, instead of saying yes to pro bono work, we talked about working for free last week, look for some kind of compensation. This doesn't have to be big bucks, but even a token or a stipend is something. For example, my mom's tiny little church used to ask me to sing every Christmas at their holiday sing-along. Will you be the MC? Will you come sing for us? Now, when I was in town, this was no big deal. And it was easy to say yes. I was going to be at the church anyways, most likely. So I worked for free. But then I moved to Nashville, a 9-hour drive from my mama's little church, and they still asked me to come and sing for free. Oh, I love them. They're so wonderful. No, I can't, right? I won't be in town. Traveling ain't cheap, and this was the part that caught me. You're paying the other musicians. So why not me? Because my cousin was the piano player at the church and he got a check and I didn't. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why how come he gets paid and I don't? Because it was my aunt cutting the check. And I'm like, there's something wrong here, you guys. So you're paying the other musicians. Why not me? Oh, good point. So they did offer to cover some of my travel expenses. Now, even though it didn't completely cover all my costs, I still said yes. Because I did want to participate, if it was possible for me. I did want to help, and I did also want to change their perception of my skills, my talents. Remember, you train people how to treat you. Let me bang that drum loud and proud, you guys. You train people how to treat you. And by working for free, I was training them to expect that I would work for free. I talked about this last week. By changing my tune, so to speak, and asking for something, like put some skin in the game, show me you really want me here, I was training them to expect something different. Now, the idea here isn't to change your rates so much as to change your perception in the market, your positioning as a person who won't work for free all the time. One client was asked to speak at a conference that didn't offer a speaker fee, right? This is one of my clients. So she asked for travel reimbursement. I said, look, you got to ask, right? The answer is always no if you don't ask. Well, she asked and she got it. And then she went to the event and she nailed it, of course, because she's awesome. By defraying the cost of her travel, she was not only able to attend and speak at the event, she positioned herself in the minds of the event organizers as someone who doesn't work for free and, because she nailed it, is worth every penny. Now, to my knowledge, everyone else at that event got paid nothing. She asked and she received. Number four, speaking of positioning, Make sure your pricing matches the story of your brand mythology. I can't tell you the number of times I've seen people say their offer is for one group or type of people, one audience, but it's priced for an entirely different audience. I told a client the other day that a Tiffany diamond inside a discount retail warehouse will always look overpriced compared to everything else in the room. Likewise, if you're touting yourself as a sort of Neiman Marcus, you can't charge Walmart prices. It simply won't sell. People won't believe you. Mark Joyner, the author of many books, including The Irresistible Offer, How to Sell Your Product or Service in 3 Seconds or Less, writes that there are 4 big questions every offer needs to answer. 2 of them are, what's in it for me? And why should I believe you? And I'll put a link in the show notes so that you guys can check out the book. Mark was a client of mine for years, and he's a really great guy, and this book is really solid. But, you know, what's in it for me, and why should I believe you? Because if a buyer sees a price that's mismatched to their expectation, they're not going to believe you. And then they don't buy. In my book, Creative Freedom, How to Own Your Dreams Without Selling Your Soul, since we're talking about books here, I tell the story of John Frieda's hair care line. Now, celebrity designer Anne McKevitt told this story at a conference that I was at a few years ago. So this is not my story. This is her story. She was his shampoo girl when she was first coming up. Okay, so this is about the time he was getting ready to do this. Frieda's salon was the place where the rich and the famous, the fabulous people, went for fabulous hair. These were not $6 cheapy haircuts. We're talking big bucks here. And when he first launched his hair care line, he did the standard product markup. He basically doubled his wholesale cost because, you know, that's what you do with retail products, right? So let's say it was a $3 wholesale rate and he had the shampoo and conditioner in his store for $6. Now I'm guessing on those prices, she didn't specify the prices, but Anne said that the prices were so low that his celebrity customers were suspicious that the product was inferior. They essentially didn't believe that a $6 bottle of washing up liquid with smelly stuff in it would really be good for their hair. That it might actually do harm to their big bucks haircut. So it didn't sell. It just sat on the shelves, languishing. Undeterred, Frieda jacked the prices on the hair care line to match the high dollar haircuts he was giving to the rich and famous in his salon, and the product started flying off the shelves. He repositioned his offerings to match the expectations of his market. And people believed it was worth the new price he was asking because it made sense to them, to his right audience. People are weird, y'all. We purchase based on emotion and we justify it with logic. In this case, fear says, well, I'm not sure I can believe that a guy who charges $300 for a haircut can also charge $6 for a bottle of shampoo that actually works. Like, help my brain figure this out. Not only that, you've got a prestige factor in a salon like that, right? I want the best of the best of the best of the best, and I'm willing to pay for it. And you wheel in this $6 bottle of shampoo? Oh, I don't think so. That is clearly not the best of the best of the best. It's $6. Why is it even in this salon? Do you hear the storyline that goes on in people's heads? People are weird. So do your people believe you? Is your pricing story in alignment with who you're trying to serve? If not, you gotta fix that. Number 5, numero cinco. This brings me to the next point that's on the opposite end of the spectrum. Remember when we talked about Moneyball last week? Well, if too many people are calling you a bargain, oh my gosh, you're such a great deal. I can't believe you're only charging this much for that. Wow, that's such a great deal. If too many people are calling you a bargain, you need to scale back on your offering, or you need to charge more. Either one of those approaches will give you the net effect of getting more money for what you're putting out into the world. One coach I know charged $10,000 for the first year of her year-long program. Now, some of you are probably going, oh my God, I can't imagine ever spending $10,000. And others of you are going, wow, that's all? Golly, that seems low. Again, perceptions, audience, right? So She charged $10,000 for the first year of her program, and it was filled with a bunch of bonus incentives to get people to say yes. Thousands of dollars in bonuses and incentives, worth almost as much as the program itself. Of course, naturally, people jumped at the chance to enroll, saying it was such an incredible bargain for the price. Oh, this is great for this investment, and I get all of this stuff too. Wow, this is so awesome. But she ended up not being able to deliver in a timely manner, and a lot of the offers didn't end up getting used anyways. She just put too much in. People were just overwhelmed, and it was costing her time and money on delivery, so her margins were a lot thinner than she'd expected, even at $10,000. So she took that lesson to heart. The second year, she doubled her annual fee, and she cut the content in half. So she did both, right? She put less in to make it less overwhelming, and she raised her rates because it wasn't her first year at the rodeo anymore, right? So for people who had been with her the first year, yeah, it was a bit of an adjustment. They were there the first year. They decided to stick around the second year because they still saw a solid ROI. For all her new clients who had no clue what the old rate was, it was no big deal. Oh, you're charging this now? Okay, that makes sense. Remember, new customers don't typically know what the old pricing was. You know, they just don't. And most people expect that prices go up. Oh, you had something last year for $1,000 and now you're charging $1,500. Maybe it's better this year. It's new and improved this year. You've got a year under your belt with it. That makes sense. People expect the prices go up. You can't walk into most stores today and expect to pay 1920s prices for much of anything. Prices go up. Another example is what I call the tuna can approach. Tuna cans here in the States used to contain 6 ounces, but now, as I record this, they contain 5. The price hasn't changed much, but the contents have. The net effect is a price increase, but the consumer doesn't feel like prices have changed since it's still roughly the same price per can. There's just less in the can. Okay? Sometimes we have to make these adjustments when production costs go up and the market isn't ready to pay more. Tuna can's a tuna can, it's a tuna can. There's tuna cans. I can buy any brand of tuna. Most people aren't brand loyal. Some are, but not everyone is. It's a commodity. Cereal boxes got skinnier, but the price per box stayed about the same. So they didn't raise the price of the cereal. They just put less cereal in the box, which effectively raises the price, but the end user doesn't feel the price increase until they go to buy the next box of cereal. And they're like, why am I buying cereal more quickly than I used to? Mom used to say that to me. She's like, you guys eat the cereal way too fast. And I'm like, no, Ma, the boxes are smaller than they used to be. And you know, they don't, it doesn't register. Okay. So if you've got a product or a service that can be scaled down to maintain your pricing at the current level, then that might be a consideration to make so that your end user doesn't feel like they've gotten an incredibly huge, you know, you're price gouging or whatever. You know, maybe instead of doing a 60-minute session with a client, you do a 50-minute session or a 45-minute session. So your dollars per hour effectively go up, but they're paying the same price and they're just getting a little bit less time with you. And if, you know, depending on what you're doing, that might be totally doable for you. I've done that with a couple of clients too. I'm like, does it really take you 4 hours to do this with them? Could you do it in 3 and charge the same price? Well, I could if we did this and this. All right, well, let's systematize that piece and give them a form to fill out so that you don't have to spend 4 hours on the phone with them. You can spend 3 and charge the same amount because they're still doing the same amount of work. It's just not you having to be on the phone with them. I can do that? Yes. Yes, you can. It is your business, and you can pretty much run it however you want to, so long as it's legal. And that's what I tell people, so long as it's legal. Number 6, create options at different price points. Now, Apple does this really well. You can buy an iPad, an iPad mini, or an iPad Pro. And they all essentially do the same thing. They're all tablet devices. But the features on each are a little different and cater to a different market. Another way to think of this is small, medium, and large sizing at your local fast food joint. Some people want more bells and whistles, while other people are completely happy with a basic version of your offering. Not everyone wants or needs bells and whistles. For service providers, you could create a DIY, a DWY, or a DFY version of the exact same thing. do it yourself for way less than having me do it for you. Or let me come alongside you and we can work together on it for a price somewhere in the middle. So do it yourself, done with you, or done for you. The client can decide which option works best for them. If you're a fusion, very often you can handle DIY with no fuss. I got this. Just wind my key and point me in the right direction and let me go. Chaotics tend to want some support along the way. Or they want somebody to just handle it for them, which is also the path that many linears tend to take. Like, here's the money, just handle it. It's one less thing I have to worry about. I can trust you to just take care of it and run with it. It's also a question of available funds. When I was just starting out, the library, that was my best friend. Heck, it still is, truth be told. I'd be broke as Toby's ghost, as my mom would say, if I bought every book that I ever wanted to read. So very often, I check it out at the library first, or if my local library doesn't have it, I'll try the interlibrary loan. People don't know about this. This is a really cool tool. You can go to your library and ask them to borrow a book from another library if they don't have it in stock. It's called an interlibrary loan. So I try interlibrary loan because some libraries got it somewhere. Almost every book, somebody's got it somewhere. So then I check it out, I read it, and if I adore it and I know I'm going to use it a lot, then I buy it. You know, that has saved me a fortune in books that I was barely able to get through the first time or couldn't bring myself to complete because they were very well marketed, super slick, but very poorly written. No, thank you. But I digress. When you're short on funds, DIY is often the default approach because it's what's affordable. Then, sometimes you're fairly confident you can do it yourself, but you've got a few bucks to get some support for you when you get stuck. Okay, that's your done with you approach. And then there's done for you. Just hire it out and pay for the convenience of not having to do it yourself. Right now, I have those options in my own business. If you're at the DIY stage, Accountability Club is a great way to check in and keep yourself accountable to whatever you're working on. I do some training and offer some minor support in there, but it's really the community being there for each other, this group of creative entrepreneurs who are all working on their own goals, they're checking in, they're celebrating their wins, they're asking for support around the things that they're stuck on. That's really what the group is for. It's a very do-it-on-your-own approach, right? Now, aside from my books and my music, that's my lowest price entry-level offer. Then there's portable coaching. You know, you need an occasional shot in the arm of personalized advice and input. You need to talk to somebody who's focused on helping you specifically, but you can't afford or you don't like the idea of getting face-to-face on a regular basis. Portable coaching is all via email, so I can do it whenever. And so can you. It's unstructured. You get a check-in email every couple of weeks, but you know you can do it kind of at your own pace. So it's great for clients who travel a lot, don't want to get on a phone. Maybe you're dealing with some stuff, and like email is the best way to reach me. I just want to talk to you via email. Okay, and they still get the support they need on their own timetable. And then when you need something deeper, longer term, more personalized, I have straight coaching or even the incubator where we actually get into your business and do work with and for you there. And those come at a higher investment level because of it. So I'm not just telling you, hey, try this. I'm showing you that this is exactly how I run my own business. When you give people a handful of options, they can compare and decide which option is best for them at the moment. This gives you the ability to reach higher and lower paying clients in new ways. If someone wants to work one-on-one with you, that can be a higher priced add-on to the lower priced offer. Or you can throw in a smaller item when they purchase the larger package. Here, you're creating more value through collections, add-ons, or bundles, rather than continuing to raise your rates. Okay, so it's a different way to effectively raise your rate without having to crank out more hours or anything like that. Here you're creating value, okay? So just remember, keep your options limited to only a few. Otherwise, a confused mind says no. You don't want to overwhelm them with too many choices because that just makes it frustrating and too time-consuming to make a decision. And decision fatigue is real, so keep your options easy. Number 7. Now, this is less about the action of adjusting your pricing and more about how to rewire your brain for the new pricing. Most of us can't just state new rates with ease. Oh, yesterday I was charging $100 an hour. Today I'm charging $500 an hour. Let's make that happen. Yesterday that item was $50. Today it's $5,000. Like, that usually takes a little bit of effort. We have to hear ourselves say it a few times before we're comfortable owning it as our truth. So go ahead and do it. Practice your sales conversations in a mirror with an accountability partner, or just record and watch yourself. You're basically retraining your brain, much like when the new year rolls around and you have to practice writing the date a few times with the new year instead of the old one. It's just practice, muscle memory. One of my clients is an amazingly gifted designer and visual artist. She's got decades of experience, and she was grossly undercharging for her work when we met. I encouraged her to raise her rates, and she was game, but she wasn't keen on the rate that I had suggested. $350 an hour felt like a huge sum of money to her compared to what she had been charging. So we practiced. I'd ask her during each of our coaching sessions, whenever it came up, how much are your rates again? Remind me, like, how much, what are your rates now? How much are your rates now? How much do you charge to work with clients? Remind me again. And I did this in some fashion every session until she could easily say, oh, I charge $350 an hour. Oh, my rates are $350 an hour. I charge $350 an hour. How much are my rates? Oh, $350 an hour, at least, minimum. Now she's regularly getting paid that rate, when before she felt like charging $200 was way too much. And we didn't just jack her prices either, to be clear on this. We looked closely at her process, what she was really offering, and the amount of care that she was putting into her work. And then she actually took on some clients at that new rate and realized how much effort was really involved. She quickly began to see that the value really was there. She just wasn't confident in it, which, that's another story. Confidence comes with practice. That's a great shortcut for building practice. Well, okay, I say shortcut, but really it's not. You got to do the work. You got to put in the practice. But think about the things you're most confident about. Chances are good you've had a lot of practice with them. That's not a coincidence. But most people think confidence comes first, and that's not usually true. Practice begets confidence. So practice saying your rates to yourself in a mirror. It might feel awkward, but it works. Raising your rates often comes with more fear than anything else. When you can quell the fear and just name your price, very often you'll find that your right audience will be happy to pay it. And if people aren't happy, then they probably aren't your right audience. Remember, even a Tiffany diamond will seem overpriced at Walmart. If you need help, I invite you to consider joining us for Overcoming Under-Earning for Creative Entrepreneurs. This 5-week program helps you unpack those money stories and rewire your brain to charge and accept the real value that you and your great work bring to the world. You can learn more about it at lisarobinyoung.com/underearning, and I will put a link in the show notes. So now it's to you. What do you struggle with when it comes time to raise your rates? How have you gotten over your own fears around making pricing changes? Share your thoughts and ideas in the comments on the blog and be part of our rising tide. Speaking of which, if you're not a member, it's free. And when you join, you also get access to the show transcripts and other bonuses that are only available to our Rising Tide members. And so this concludes this episode of the Creative Freedom Podcast. For you visual types, our next video drops in a couple of days. And if you like it live, boom, chicka bow, bow, join us for our Q&A about this topic on my Facebook page at the end of the week.
Next time on Creative Freedom.
If you like this episode, subscribe, leave a review, please, 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 and share us around with your friends, because there's people who need to know about us and they're only going to find us through you. Sharing is caring, after all. Next week, we are going to be talking about shame. and the stranglehold shame can put on us that keeps us from earning even a fair wage for the work that we do. So I hope you will join us for that next time. And until then, for more inspiration and education to help you own your dreams without selling your soul, come on, see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.